Welcome to Season 10, Episode 39 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 28th of November, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, hello. Joining me this week is Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, hello.
And Martin. Hello, Martin.
Bonsoir.
Oh, German. Mark, what have you been up to this week?
I went to sunny Southampton to go and see The Darkness.
Oh, are you feeling better now?
I was feeling fine at the time.
Okay.
What's is this darkness as in the light bulbs have stopped working in the street lamps, or darkness, the popular combo?
Darkness is, the band, The Darkness.
When you say
standing in the dark.
A band? Yeah, well, I mean, I know nothing about these people.
Oh, come on.
Oh, you must do.
Sing one of
their songs.
I Believe
in a Thing Called Love?
Oh, I know them. Yeah, I like that one.
Oh dear. Was it good?
That's
Mark?
The only one I know, probably.
Well, you probably, like, they released about five singles after their first
album. Go on then, sing another one.
That wasn't exactly singing. What was another one they did? Love Is Only a Feeling, Growing on Me. You probably know them if you heard them.
Probably. Yeah.
But anyway, they're
How
still
was
around.
It?
And it was excellent and flamboyant and ridiculous.
Lots of spandex.
And brilliant. A mild amount of spandex. Yes, lots of bright colours and high notes being sung. Mm-hmm. Yes, very enjoyable. They've still got it.
Excellent.
Have they been around a while?
They have been around since I was at school.
So not
I think they
then.
Released their first album when I was 15.
Wow.
And I first saw them in about 2004.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Awesome. I hear about your antics going out, listening to popular beat combos in discotheques, and I think I should probably go, and then I remember that I'm old, so I don't...
Actually, there was an interesting range of ages there, because they're one of those bands which are sort of, you know, they're the sort of band that a lot of people who are in...
Have a wide and diverse appeal.
Well, yeah, it's like it's the parents who are into the original rock bands who influenced The Darkness, and also the kids who now listen to them. So there was loads and loads of families there.
Huh.
Yeah.
What type of venue was it?
Southampton Guildhall. So, yeah, it's a sort of owned by or run by O2, big open room, basically. It's not a particularly good venue, I have to say. But, you know, it was just, yeah, it's where they have the beer festival in Oxford, in Southampton as well, rather. So it's not, it wasn't like a club venue. It was like a sort of hall.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Also, Martin, we didn't get to talk about your new hardware purchase last time. What have you got now?
Well, I have purchased the Razer Core V2, which is the external graphics enclosure. So I have the Razer Core, and I now have the newer version of it.
Is this just a faster one that can do
It's only ever so slightly faster. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the main reason for getting it.
It was the main reason for getting it that Bitcoin jumped in value again.
There was that. That was an element, yes. Yeah, so I got the new one mostly because this cost 0.1 Bitcoin. So, yeah, I got it for that. And also, I found the Razer Core extremely useful. And I find that I've got this thing, and I keep on plugging it into lots of different devices. So I got another one. And another graphics card so that I can experiment with more things. But I've been having a pretty miserable time trying to get the RX Vega 56, which is also a new purchase, to
What's
work.
That?
It's a fancy graphics card from AMD. So in performance terms, somewhere around the performance levels of an NVIDIA 1070, there or thereabouts. And I was hoping, because AMD have done all of this work to open source these drivers, that it would be a cakewalk and I'd just be able to slap the card in the enclosure, plug the enclosure into the laptop, and then be 3D-ing like a demon. And unfortunately, it's been a miserable disaster from start to finish.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So lots of work still to be done there in order to get this to work.
And is that the card or the Razer Core 2?
It's the card. It's the support for the card. And I think specifically the support for the card over PCI Thunderbolt 3. Yeah, so that's maybe that'll be an over the Christmas and New Year holidays project. Yeah.
Enough of your first world problems. Let's get on with the show.
Hello,
And now it is time for some crowdfunding news. And first in our schedule of crowded news this week is the Game Shell, which purports to be the world's first modular portable games console with a GNU Linux embedded operating system. This sounds very interesting. So
it's quite funky. I saw this the other day and backed it straight away.
Surprise.
Yeah, I know, right? I hadn't backed anything on Kickstarter for a few weeks, and so now was the time. But it looks really cool. It looks like a Game Boy, like original OG Game Boy.
It really does.
Bit chunky, with the same kind of button layout. But if you take it apart, it's modular. So the screen, the keyboard, the CPU part, the speaker part, these are all like four separate modules that you clip together, and you could make your own case, or you could make additional modules, or you could create your own device using some or all of these parts or additional parts that you create yourself. It's an open source retro gaming STEM portable console, and because it runs GNU/Linux, the idea is you can develop stuff for it. So not like the what was that one that I previously bought? The Arduboy, which is Arduino based. Right. This one is a proper computer. And so you can use proper languages, and they advertise all the common things like Python and Lua and, you know, all kinds of other popular game development languages that you could use to develop stuff for this rather funky little portable device.
And unlike the Arduboy, which I don't think would ever run Doom, this has the obligatory "It runs Doom" video on there,
of course,
opening
of course.
Page. So yes, it's all you need, frankly, isn't it?
Yeah. So they've got like one. I think the main board is an ARM based system on chip, which I think they're calling the Clockwork Pi, and then the I think the keypad is actually an Arduino board,
yes,
or an Arduino compatible board,
yes.
So that's if you want to do extra sort of breakout from that and add on bits and bobs, that's probably entirely possible through that.
And you can 3D print your own case as well.
We're straight back on to seeing it.
You know, after the success of our, you know, gaming bonanza episode last week, you know, we're straight back in there with gaming news again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to get Tony back. I backed it because I quite like these handheld gaming things, and you know, you can develop your own games for it, or you could use it to play emulators and stuff like that. So if you wanted to play ye old school games, it's got a battery on board. So it's got it's a 1,000 milliamp hour battery, but, you know, you could potentially make a bigger case, or, you know, you could do something different and power it with, you know, something bigger if you wanted longer battery life, or tweak it.
Solar panels.
Degree. Yeah, yeah, you could do all that kind of stuff. So it just looks like a nice, open, portable gaming device, which I thought was quite cool. And the fact that it mentions, you know, STEM portable console, I think the idea is that you might use this in education, because maybe using a Raspberry Pi with a big keyboard and a computer, you know, is a bit different from something that kids might want to get involved with, pick up a handheld thing and actually create games for a handheld console with a color screen might be more appealing, perhaps.
Is that STEM association just perpetuating the myth of the 1980s when everyone was buying Commodore 64s and ZX Spectrums to help with your homework?
Yeah, please, Mum, I need one of these in order to do my homework. Yeah, maybe. Perhaps, but I can see how this could be, you know, useful in a classroom setting. It doesn't have to be for playing games, obviously. I mean, it has the button layout, the usual D-pad and the AB buttons. So, you know, it's a traditional gaming layout, but it's, you know, it's kind of the right size for children's hands for, you know, prototyping and all that kind of stuff. It looks quite cool. So I hope it succeeds. Well, it's already passed the goal of, I think they're asking for £37,000 or thereabouts.
Oh, that's quite modest, isn't it?
Yeah, that was their target, and they've already hit £158,000, so they're way beyond that. And they've still got 20 days to go, and they've got around nearly 2,000 backers. So we shall see.
I hope they don't become a victim of their own success.
In what way?
As in they get way more orders than they were ever expecting and then struggle under the weight of it.
Well, yeah, and some seem to do well.
at that kind of thing. Like, you know, some of these card games and board games that I've seen where they've gone gangbusters and they've managed to fulfillment, they've managed to sort out. But I guess card games are very different from electronic manufacture. But it, I mean, it doesn't look like this thing is a load of renders. It does actually look like they have stuff, and it's just the case of spinning up the factories in order to build the thing, engage support, and, you know, build as many of them as there are willing people who want to buy the thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Next up, we have a crowdfunded game, Nimbatus Drone Constructor. Now, this is, well, it's kind of unique in my experience. It's a procedurally generated universe where you're creating drones which are either controlled or autonomous to complete various missions. I can't really sum it up well because there's quite a lot of different parts to it. But yeah, basically you get given like the core of a drone and lots of different bits you can add to it, and you've got to complete a task, and you sort of, you make a prototype and you see how it does, and then you might take off some weapons and put on some shields or put on different engines and make sure it's got enough power for everything, and then try again, and you sort of keep trying until you've cracked it.
The video for this is quite amusing. They show someone creating a little craft, and it just flies around in circles and doesn't work. And it's like, okay, give up, make a new one. And the next one they make actually flies down to the surface and just crashes like straight into the surface. So the next one they make, they iterate on that and they add lasers that burrow into the surface so they can drill down and get the thing that they're the target that they're looking for. But it's, the lasers are woefully underpowered. So the next generation one, they build this much, much bigger one with many more lasers, and it gets down to the surface and burrows through the surface, and then enemies swarm around it and shoot it before it actually gets to the target. And so it's like this, it's quite an amusing video showing how you can iterate on the design. It reminded me very much of things like Kerbal Space Program, where you attach rockets to something and you've got to get the physics right, and you've got to balance everything, and you've got to have a payload of fuel plus your rockets plus maybe your lasers or your drilling machine or whatever, or solar panels and defense capability. And it just looked like quite a fun little game, and it's another Kickstarter thing, but it's
I think I'm spotting a pattern here. Did you back this one by any chance?
Yeah, I might have done. But the thing is, like, you might be thinking, well, Alan put all of these in here because he wants these things to succeed, so please, everyone, back these things. But I put these things in there because they've already been, they've already hit their targets. Right. I wouldn't have put them in if they hadn't hit the target. They have both hit their target. This one has also had about 2,000 backers. They were after £15,000, and they've got £40,000. And obviously, it's only got 6 days to go. So as you listen to this, probably only a couple of days to go. But they are targeting Linux on release. So yeah, I backed it mainly. I know some people are a bit reticent to back crowdfunding campaigns for games because often they, you know, they release for Windows and then they don't quite get around to releasing for Linux, or it's a stretch goal for Linux, or, you know, they just never do it. But this one seems to be targeting Linux, and there's even a demo you can download and play already. So, you know, they already know it works on Linux because it's a Unity 3D based game, and I downloaded it and played the demo. Excellent. Which is what motivated me to back it.
Cool.
Right. Speaking of crowdfunders, Gemini is an ultra thin clamshell mobile device with fully integrated tactile QWERTY keyboard that fits in your pocket. And I did not back this thing.
No, I did.
Ah, there we go.
Really? See, this looks a lot to me like the GPD Pocket.
Yes, you could be forgiven for thinking so. So obviously that was another one I backed as well, and I have the GPD Pocket. Alan does games, I do devices. I think that's right. the general division here. Yeah, so I backed this some time ago, and they've, in the last update, they've asked their backers to come and choose their keyboard layouts that they want on their devices when they're shipped out. So I think they're very close.
You said Dvorak, didn't you? Or Colmac. Which one did you choose?
I'm sorry, I just went for plain vanilla UK English for use in Europe was the option that I went for. But in terms of its comparisons with the GPD Pocket, I think its form factor is probably the only thing that is about the same. It's a very different device. The GPD is an x86 processor, an Atom processor, right, whereas this is an ARM-based device.
Okay.
Does that mean it has a much longer, or potentially much longer, battery life than the GPD Pocket?
We shall see. I mean, until we get these things, we won't know. I mean, the GPD actually lasts remarkably well, between 8 to 10 hours. So we should have to see. But the interesting thing about this is it comes with Android, and there is also the ability to dual boot into a Linux operating system.
Now, I've been wondering about this from what I've seen. When they say there's a dual boot Linux option, mm-hmm. does that mean it comes preloaded with in dual booting mode, or does that mean they support you loading your own Linux OS on it to dual boot it?
It remains to be seen exactly how this is implemented, yeah. but they
it
did
seems
release
a bit sort of vague at the moment.
Yeah, they did release a video last month of this working. So you okay. boot into Android, mm-hmm. and there is an app in their Android image which is to boot into Linux. And in their example, they're using Debian as their operating system. So you choose to boot into Linux, and I don't know if it's kexec or something, but it then boots into a full Linux environment, and it's just a Linux desktop operating system at that point, running Debian. So it's not a ch-rooted thing. You know, it's
not
the
doing
ability
the
to boot
and,
into a full
and VNC
display.
Stuff. It's definitely booting into proper...
It's proper Linux, right. Yes. Now,
like the Maru thing does on certain...
No, it's not like that. No, this is actually the only thing that's running is Linux.
Okay.
So there's no Android there underneath.
And when are you expected to get this thing?
Well, it was due for shipping in November, so they're a little bit behind, but I never expected that this would actually ship in November, because I always felt that their goals were kind of aggressive. So maybe in time for Christmas, maybe early in the new year, we shall see. But it's definitely very close now.
I know you're not saying which Christmas. That's good. Don't well, set your expectations too high.
I think either this Christmas or New Year 2018. There you go.
And it for those who, like you mentioned, the GPD Pocket form factor, but it really looks very much like the old Scion organizer.
I think
Scion 5 or something, whatever it is. Scion 3.
Yeah, they've recently been nominated for award at CES 2018. They're a proper design outfit. They've got pedigree in this market space. They did work on devices like this back in the past, and it's a proper, you know, clamshell QWERTY keyboard device, and the keyboard implementation looks proper, unlike the GPD Pocket, which looks like they just threw all of the keycaps in the air and left them where they landed.
Brilliant.
And finally, Purism has announced the winners of its Librem 5 ringtone contest.
Ooh.
So this is the Librem 5, which successfully crowdfunded not long ago. They ran a competition to see who would be the default sounds on their phone.
Mm. That's a nice idea, actually. It's a nice way to get involvement and keep the news cycle going, because obviously the crowdfunder finished a few weeks ago, and it's obviously bubbling along, and they're working on that. And, you know, it's a nice way to get another bite out of the news cherry is to promote them.
And it's also, it's a really distinctive thing on a phone. I mean, if you think about like the ringtone for Skype, for example, everybody knows that. You hear that, you go, oh, that's Skype. And like there's the exactly, and the default like text message sound on an iPhone, everyone is going to hear that. Mm. You know, you'll hear it on the bus, you'll hear it in the office, and so it's quite a big deal to get something like nice and distinctive and not too annoying. Mm-hmm. And I really like what they've got from some of the results.
So they've got a bunch of categories: email notification, phone call, power on, text message, and video call, and do you want to hear them? The ones that won, which will be the ones that deliver on the phone. Obviously, you can change it. So this is the phone call.
I like it.
I quite like that.
Yeah.
I would be perfectly happy with that. The video one is very similar. If you're incoming video call, it's very similar.
Subtly different.
Yeah, goes on a little bit longer. Text message is pretty short and basic. I quite like that. That's all right, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you've got text. Yeah, that'll do. Email notification I quite like as well. Oh, no, that's not. That's
no, that's just your phone ringing.
Yeah, sorry, my Librem is ringing from the future. No, the email notification is this one.
Okay, so that's similar to the text message one as well.
You've got mail. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
The one that's weird, though, is when you power the phone on. This is what happens.
What?
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's the anomaly, but never mind.
What? Wow. I mean, it's weird, but...
You'll remember it, won't you?
Like, people on the bus, if you reboot your phone, because it's going to crash, so you're going to reboot it. So you're going to be hearing that a lot, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to hear that, and people around you are probably going to hear it, and they're going to be like, what the hell? Will you shut up? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I love or hate that. I think after a considerable amount of hearing that, I would probably get annoyed.
What I'm really impressed with is the number of people that they had participate in this. 150 entries. I mean,
wow.
What a great way to involve the community. And also, far more people prepared to put time and effort behind this than I ever imagined would be interested in the device in the first place.
Mm. And that's the end of the news, I guess.
We've got a roundup of community news and an event. And first up, Samuel Hewitt, developer of the Suru icon theme, has written about developing icons for third-party apps or not. So this is an interesting piece about, given he's developed an icon theme which contains all of the system icons, people were then expecting that this would include apps for things like Chrome and
Skype,
yeah, exactly. The other common apps which you might install, and this is a bit sort of explaining why he doesn't think that's what app developers should necessarily not app developers sorry icon users. Developers should necessarily do.
Yeah,
but isn't the problem then that from a user's point of view it looks inconsistent? You get one style from the icon designer, which may be like very distinctive and very attractive, and I don't doubt that everything Sam Hewitt does is very distinctive and attractive, but isn't there the juxtaposition in your launcher, given these things sit right next to each other in your launcher, that you're going to have two very distinctly separate styles of icons in there?
And the point that Sam makes is that's no different from being on any other platform, you know, like Android or iOS or Windows. You know, the developer, the ISV behind the application ships their icons because that's their brand and their image, and that's the way it's going to be. And we shouldn't be infringing on that.
Right. And I look down my launcher down the left-hand side of my Ubuntu 16.04 system, and it is a right mishmash of icons. Like, you know, my Spotify icon is a small circle, and then there's a big rectangle for Steam, and then there's a big circle for Mastodon, and a big rectangle for Terminator, and WhatsApp is another icon entirely that isn't even a circle. It's got the little speech bubbly thing, and Rocket Chat is different. Again, they're all completely different, so they all are a mess.
Yeah.
But that's the delivered experience. I think what people's expectations are when they install an icon theme is people expect, okay, I'm going to fix that problem. But that's not the problem that Sam's fixing. Is that what the post is about, right?
Yes, indeed.
Right.
Yeah. And you might remember some years ago, the Faenza icon theme was very popular. It's sort of a boxy square icon set where everything has a regimented shape and form. And that did have, you know, a number of icons.
I think you'll find that covers every icon, really.
Yeah. And that was forked into the Mate project. But one of things we do in the packaging for that now, and again, it's to protect the rights of some of these application holders, is when we package it for Debian and Ubuntu, we strip things like the icons for Twitter and Facebook and Skype and Spotify and Steam and what have you out of that, because that Faenza icon theme hasn't been updated for years. So the versions of its Spotify and, you know, Skype icons are very different from what those applications are using these days.
Right.
Interesting. What's next, Alan?
Next up is a tweet from the internet's Ihe Doherty, who you may or may not know from the boutique Linux distribution Solus. That's right, isn't it? Boutique? That's the right word, I think. And he tweeted a screenshot showing his Solus desktop, but the interesting part is he's got some interesting snaps installed on it. And that, you know, we've mentioned before that Ike's worked to get snap support in Solus, but this particular one is quite interesting because he's got Steam installed via a snap, which is a bit different because there, up until now, there hasn't been a Steam snap in the store, and the work that Ike's done has been to enable Steam as a snap, but he's done a bit more work than just shoving Steam in a snap. He's done some work on the libraries that Steam requires in order to run. I don't fully understand exactly what he's done.
What kind of voodoo is this?
Maybe we should talk to him about it and get him to tell us what's going on.
That's probably better.
Let's do that. Yes. Let's get Ike on the phone.
Yes.
Okay. We'll do that maybe next week.
Yes.
Also in the news, Pharonix have been benchmarking 11 Linux distributions to see which boots the fastest, the most critical.
There are 11 Linux distros? Really?
Yes, there are 11. Yeah, he didn't do the full 873-way comparison. I was very disappointed to see that he'd been slacking off there.
Yeah.
But yes, it's an interesting comparison of different distributions and their boot performance, and there's some sort of, you know, shared ground and there's some outliers and all the rest of it. And the one thing we can take away from this is that Clear Linux and Solus seem to sort of dominate the faster end of the boot experience.
Interesting.
And like the previous story, a certain Ike Doherty is involved in that, has been involved in those projects. So if boot performance is important to you, it's an interesting read.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I know a while ago, a few years ago, there was a whole lot of focus on boot speed. This was back in the days of the Dell Mini 9. So we're talking pre-Unity days, I think, like 2009, that kind of 2010, that kind of area. There was a lot of work to try and improve boot speed and make the experience of booting up your machine like sub 10 seconds to get you right to the logon screen, and then you punch in your password and you get to a desktop super fast. And we seem to have forgotten all of that. Like, a lot of distros, I know you're very specifically calling out Solus and Clear Linux as they did not forget this. They never forgot. But it seems everyone else has, and that boot speed seriously taken a hit in the last.
So?
Yeah, definitely.
Because in these metrics, it shows that the boot performance has improved because they benchmark a number of Ubuntu versions and it's getting faster over time.
Interesting.
And I wonder if hardware these days sort of negates a lot of this.
Well, yeah, every year you get... I'm not calling into question Michael Larrabell's testing process. I'm sure it's rather rigorous and robust. But, you know, is he testing on the same machine? Like, five different... Okay, interesting. I mean, the problem for me is I never reboot my machine. I leave it on. It's got an eight-day uptime at the moment, and that usually runs up to 20-odd days before something starts eating all my RAM and I have to reboot. So it's funny. I tend to discover these bugs that only people who have very high uptimes tend to discover, because it seems that most people don't leave their machine on. They shut it down or reboot for kernel upgrades, and I tend to leave it on all the time, and I discover these weird bugs that happen with high uptime.
Since I could afford SSDs, my machines are always booted fast enough that I've never been inclined to leave them on.
I just suspend mine these days.
It's not about boot speed for me. It's the fact that I've got everything open.
Oh, it's the fact that you leave every tab you've ever visited open in everything. I forget, sorry.
Well, not just the tabs, but all the other applications as well. There's like a dozen applications open on this thing, and I just don't relish the fact of turning the whole thing off and turning it back on again and then reopening everything and rearranging all the windows and putting them back in the right place. If the desktop which, you know, it tried to many years ago, restored everything back to where it was when I turned the machine on, which I know other platforms can do quite admirably, then I wouldn't have to worry about this and I could just reboot it and I wouldn't care. But the fact is they don't, and I have to rearrange. I have three, you know, this is a first world problem, but I have three displays and I have to rearrange all the windows all over the place all the time. And I like having it so that I walk in the room and start work. I don't want to have to walk in the room, turn the machine on, and then open up 20 windows and then rearrange them all before I can open my email. That just feels like barbarian.
Yeah, that, I suppose what would be really good would be if there was a project to continue developing Unity 7, which might implement a feature kind of like that, which brings me on to my next story.
Seamless.
Dale Bodwin has posted in the Ubuntu Community Hub about the upcoming Ubuntu Unity flavor.
Yeah, this is an interesting development. So, contrary to popular belief, or maybe niche belief, there's a lot of people that really like the Unity 7 desktop.
No way.
Yes, it's true. You were right all along, Alan. And
oh, man, I'm so glad we recorded you saying that.
Well, we do have a clip of you telling me I was right a few weeks ago. So this is
negated.
This is all fine. So, yeah, there's a group of enthusiastic community members who've got together. They're using the Ubuntu Community Hub to coordinate their efforts. And they are starting to piece together how they can re-deliver the Unity desktop on Ubuntu as an official flavor. And nice. So far, they've got all of the legal sign-off that they require from Canonical for use of trademarks and what have you. And they're going through the process of organizing their team and fleshing out how they're going to do this and what the roadmaps look like. And then a bit longer term, how they're going to contribute to and help maintain stroke develop Unity 7.
So interestingly, like when there's a new flavor that comes along, whether it's Ubuntu Mate is one of the newest flavors in Ubuntu, you may have heard of it, and Ubuntu Budgie Remix became a flavor. Like when these became flavors, there was a lot of work that they had to do to get things in line. You would think that this project wouldn't have an awful lot of ducks to get in a row, because up until very, very recently, Unity was the official flavor of Ubuntu. Yeah. And so you would like to hope that they don't have to make a lot of effort. The difference is this whole project is being handed off to a completely different set of people.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a handover 6 months ago when Unity was dropped. It's being picked up piece by piece as we go along, which is unfortunate. But luckily, there are people on the desktop team in Canonical who are helping them out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I think this will be an extremely popular flavor of Ubuntu.
Yeah, it certainly will with me. and we've got an event. What's the event, Martin?
The event is Google Coding. And if you're a regular listener, you might remember that we spoke about this a few weeks ago. So this is a Google-sponsored event for students between the ages of 13 and 17. To participate in contributing to open source projects. And one of the organizations that's participating this year is Ubuntu.
Ooh, that's
and
convenient.
There are currently close to 140 tasks in the Ubuntu organization for students. And there's been a fire hose of activity today as we record this podcast. Google Coding started today. So it runs from the 28th of November until the 17th of January next year. Anyone from anyone in the world can participate, providing you're a student of the appropriate age. And you'll find a link in our show notes as to where you can sign up and get involved. And we would love to see a new generation of Ubuntu contributors come and join us.
Mm. Even if you're not between the ages of 13 and 17, if you're a member of the Ubuntu community, you can hang out in the IRC channel, which is /Ubuntu-Google, and help people who are students and who are contributing to this. And that's a place where people can drop by and ask for help with a particular task, and they have other ways of getting access to us as well. But you know, it's nice to have round-the-clock support from people in the community for these very new people to Ubuntu. Well, I say very new people to Ubuntu. We've had people who've, you know, signed up and very clearly they've already had Ubuntu installed and they're already Ubuntu users, and they just want to, you know, get started and pick up these tasks. But when it went live at 5 o'clock, you know, within, I think the Stephanie from Google, who's one of the organizers of Codin, said that within the first 20 minutes, they had more students sign up than last year within the first hour. So it's, they've already had more people signing up right at the start of the project. So that's great. It's great. New people
yep.
getting involved in open source through Ubuntu. I like it.
Brilliant.
If you're in the US, you can give us a hand by leaving us a rating on Google Play Podcasts to tell others what you think of the Ubuntu podcast.
Golly gosh, wow. That's the end of episode 39. We'll be back next week when I think we'll be discussing maybe some of this Linux Steam integration stuff with our good friend Ikey Doherty from the Solus Project.
Providing the intertubes are working to Ireland, I think we'll do that.
yeah, we haven't left yet. And also we'll have some command line love and we'll have your glorious feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.